welcome to The Audible. I'm Stuart Mandel, joined by Bruce Feldman. It is Monday morning, and you finally made it home from Phoenix. What, Saturday?
Yeah, Saturday afternoon. It was an interesting week, I got to tell you. The vibe was very different than it has been. You and I have gone to these meetings for years. First of all, it's the first time the Big Ten was there, which I think that also, you know, kind of ramped up. You know, you'd see Urban Meyer, you'd see Mark D'Antonio, James Franklin around, and all those other coaches. I think that that added a little more intrigue to everything there. But also, it felt different. We don't want to go down this road too much, but, you know, in past years, we would see 15 sports writers covering it, and this time there was about five, and I think that reflects on just kind of the direction of the industry at this point.
Yeah, but also some of it was that there was no news. Like the year before, a bunch of Big 12 writers came because the Big 12 was, you know, we thought possibly going to come out of that meeting deciding whether to expand or not. So there was news to track. There really wasn't any this time. But any other takeaways since the last time? Well, I mean, the last time we recorded, I think we'd only been there about a day. So obviously, we talked to a lot more people since then.
You know, not too much. You know, I had a good dinner with DJ Durkin, the head coach at Maryland, who's in his second season. And, you know, one thing we talked about a little bit was, you know, they had a big recruit last year, Kasim Hill, who's a quarterback who will just be getting there, I think next at the end of this month or beginning of next month. And he's, you know, it's been a while since they've had a really good quarterback, but talking to him and talking to a handful of other coaches, I feel like there's a lot of guys who are like counting or, you know, really hopeful that a freshman quarterback that they're excited about will come in and just kind of, you know, hit the ground running because there's so many programs that really need a jolt like that.
By the way, I've joked on here before about your encyclopedic knowledge of heights and weights. This week, seeing you in action and talking with these coaches, you know where all the recruits are from. You would be talking to a coach and you'd be like, when does the kid from Vegas get there? You know, that big kid from Maryland. That's another one that you seem to have encyclopedic recall of.
Stu, I am not paid to know anything about politics, and I'm not paid to know anything about science. This is all I need to know. But I like to, you know, this is just as a, like maybe a little inside baseball stuff. I thought about this before. When you go to these things, you know, it's very, very, very informal, right? And so, you know, coaches, I don't think they're relaxed. I'm not sure they want to be hounded by questions that they may be more inclined to get or be ready for when they're in front of a podium. So I think a lot of times I've thought, okay, who do I want, you know, who's comfortable talking football and kind of downloading what the spring went like, and who are the coaches you just want to try to, you know, build a relationship with and get them more comfortable with you. And you have to kind of, you know, manage your dialogue or your plan of approach accordingly.
So, yeah, I mean, you're right. A lot of our conversations were very, you know, like you and I talked to Gary Patterson for probably 15 minutes. It wasn't an interview, but I learned a lot about his team during that time.
Same thing with Kyle Whittingham. Like those guys are, you know, I feel like, you know, they love to talk football all the time about that when they see in the media and see a media member. And so those are very beneficial like that. Other guys, it's almost like, you know, I was around Leach and a few other guys for hours. I don't think once we talked about any personnel issue with their players.
We did get to see Leach mistake Tim Brando for Jim Nance.
You're going to put it out there. Yes, it was kind of a spectacular thing.
Like, so he was talking to. Okay, go ahead. Tell the story.
So Jason Candle, a very smart young coach at Akron, and I'm going to meet him. And sure enough, he's talking to Leach, and it's later in the night. And Tim wanders over, and Leach says something along the lines of he's telling Jason about writing his book. And he looks, he kind of, you know, pats Tim on the chest and was like, yeah, I was kind of inspired by that book you did where you mentioned your father and this and that. And Tim kind of said, I heard him say it, I didn't get it. He goes, Tim said, you mean the book I intend to write? And then, you know, Leach kept on talking about Tim's work. And then at one point it became a little awkward, a point when Tim goes, I think you think I'm Jim. I think you think I'm Jim Nance. So,
which our friend Brando, was he flattered by that or upset about that?
I don't know. I'm sure it wasn't the most flattering thing to be confused for somebody. I mean, Tim's been in the business a long time. But on the bright side, Jim Nance is a good-looking guy. If somebody's mistaken you, I mean, I know Tim tries to dress up as much as he can, so that's not the worst thing in the world. I think also Jim Nance played college golf at Houston, so if Tim's being mistaken for a guy who's a single-digit handicapper, good on Tim.
All right, so I did get one story out of there. About a rules proposal that's coming through the works, and I did write a story about it. You can find on foxsports.com. You remember when Fournette and McCaffrey sat out the bowl games, and it kind of led to a whole discussion of, all right, the bowls are really losing their luster. If these guys are willing to sit them out, what can be done to renew interest? And it was actually a mailbag reader of mine that suggested this, although I'm sure it was suggested other places too, and I kind of ran with it. Why not let the freshmen who've been redshirting all season play in the bowl game? And I put that out there, and people immediately loved it. Because let's be honest, unless you're playing for the championship, or you're the Rose Bowl last year, or when Iowa went to the Rose Bowl and hadn't done so in a long time, for the most part, fans kind of look at these bowls as a preview of next year, right? If you win or lose, it kind of plays into the following season. So how cool would it be to just kind of get a peek at that really hotshot running back who redshirted that year? So while not driven by that particular reason, there is a proposal in the works from the AFCA, the American Football Coach Association, and I talked to their executive director, Todd Berry, about it. The rule that they are proposing would allow players to play up to 4 games in a season and not burn their redshirt. And I mean, the main reason behind it is injuries. You know, as the season gets longer and players run more plays, you know, you're running into situations where teams get, ridiculously thin at a certain position, and it could be late in the season. You really want to keep that guy's redshirt, but you just can't. We saw that, obviously, when Chad Kelly went down last season. Shea Patterson had to burn his redshirt. And then the example we talked about there with Dana Holgorsen, I mean, he had a freshman running back last year, Martel Pettaway, who he had no plans to play, and then their top 3 running backs go down. He puts him in the 11th game of the regular season, burns his redshirt for that. So, I mean, that's the main reason being given. But yeah, one of the potential benefits of that would be you could be a little, looser with the bowl game, especially if we're going to find more and more guys doing this, more and more draft prospects leaving. I mean, you got to have somebody to replace them. So your thoughts on that proposal?
I like it. You know, I'm sure somebody will hear this and point out something that maybe we hadn't thought of as a negative. But, you know, as Dana Holgorsen said, you know, they're not playing 10 games anymore. The seasons get longer and longer. I just think it's a win-win all around. I think it makes too much sense.
I was trying to think of a negative. I was racking my brain for one. And the only like minor one I could come up with, and I said it to Todd Berry, was so obviously you can't just like exempt certain teams from it. So the playoff teams would be able to do it too. Would it be unfair or I don't know what the word would be for it if like Alabama unleashed all its red shirts in the playoff game, you know, and is a drastically looking different team maybe than during the season. But his counterpoint was if those kids were that good, Saban would have been playing.
Yeah, he's not unleashing anything. Yeah. You know, the other thing is if you want to say unfair, I mean, if you don't make a bowl, you don't get those 15 practices. So there's already an inherent unfairness to begin with. So I don't have any problem with it. I think it's a good idea. And
I think it's probably just that it's just been that way for as long as I've known. I don't know when the red shirt concept necessarily. I mean, at one point, freshmen couldn't play, period. But anyway, it's just the way it's always been. You play a game, you burn your red shirt. And then there's also, this would eliminate the idea of the medical red shirt, which can be so, not arbitrary, but like if you injure yourself in the 3rd game of the season and you lose the season, you can get a red shirt. If it happens 1 game later, you can't. So,
like at that point, if they're going to do that, you can't practice. There's certain rules that kind of get to be very murky, I think, in how it's played out.
it's also more modest, and you know, it would be less, you know, it wouldn't change the entire scope of things as much as, like, Jimbo Fisher, for one, and he's not alone, have proposed over the years that we'll just let them play 5 years. I do think there's something to be said for trying to stick mostly to a four-year career, since you're trying to graduate in 4 years for the most part. But
here's one thing. It's better for the student-athlete. Why not do it?
I mean, in this case, I think it's better for both sides. It's better for the student-athlete, and it's better for – it's better – I mean, Pat Fitzgerald, I talked to him about it, pointed out it's better for the whole team. If you have a little more depth that you know you can – you can play one guy for four games at this part of the season, one guy here, one guy there. No, you can take – you can rest your main guys for a few more snaps per game. So I should note this is very, very early in a very long process. It takes – so many hurdles for them. I mean, this is just like only now going to be forwarded to the first committee that looks at it. Then it goes to the oversight committee. Then it goes into the legislative process. The earliest you would see this actually come to fruition would be January, is when they would, the whole NCAA might vote on it. But I don't know, because of what we're saying, I mean, for it to not pass, somebody would have to raise some sort of major opposition. And I don't see that happening.
Any other reaction, or somebody you saw that you hadn't seen in a while, or somebody that...
Well, so I didn't see. I mean, I had to leave before the Big 12 really started their meetings, but toward the back end of the week. But our friend George Schroeder had a sit down with Bill Snyder. He wrote up in USA Today, and I believe you said he visited with all the reporters. You know, that has kind of gone under the radar this season. Bill Snyder's, you know, going through treatment for cancer. It seems to be going well, but he is 77, and there's reason for people obviously to be really concerned. Is he really going to keep coaching? By all indications, he is. You saw him. Anything stand out?
He did look like he lost quite a bit of weight when I'd seen him. And, you know, the last I saw him, I was like, hey, look forward to seeing you on the field this season. And he was, you know, he's always very pleasant, but you know, I'm hoping that he's able to make a strong recovery through this, because obviously it would be grueling if he's 20 years younger. But at that age, you know, you really worry about somebody, you know, somebody's health and how they respond to things, to a treatment program like that.
He's also so determined to just keep working. This is from George's story. For 6 weeks, he would drive 2 hours to Kansas City, spend the night, treatment in the morning, drive back, work in the office, get up the next day and do it again. Like, he didn't take any time off for this.
Yeah, I mean, and look, and I think we've talked about this. I think he knows he's got a really good team. He's also not a guy who's not a, you know, go play golf guy or do some of these other things that a lot of other coaches do. You know, I mean, just there's a couple, you know, you're around coaches' wives at this setting sometimes, and you know, they talk about the travel and some of the places they like to go, and so some of them see, like, at life after football is very, very enticing to them. And I'm not sure where, you know, if Bill Snyder's, you know, of the same mind as that. You know, he loves his job and he loves that program, and obviously that's been a huge part of his life.
Whenever he does retire, whether it's this year or next or whenever, there's a situation brewing there at Kansas State.
It's been there for a while. His son Sean is a really good special teams coordinator, and obviously he would love if he could take over for him.
I mean, that's his obviously strong preference, and I don't know that. I mean, John Curry left as AD, left for Tennessee, and he got out of having to deal with that situation. But whoever's going to have to deal with it, the new AD. You know, is Sean necessarily the most qualified for the job, or is he obviously the current head coach's choice? And since the current head coach is a legend there, do you kind of have to honor that? It says here in George's story that his contract signed in January 2013 stipulates that he will have, quote, appropriate input in the search for his replacement. Sean virtually runs the program right now, says Snyder. He has served in so many capacities. He's the associate AD, he's the associate head coach, special teams coordinator, served as director of ops for a long time, so he knows more than anybody on that campus. He knows Kansas State University football. Would you dare cross Bill on his way out by, you know, passing on Sean? Also, and this has been theorized, would Coach Snyder do what many others in this situation have done, most notably, I think, to Dean Smith, and retire right before the season so that you have really no choice but to promote from within?
Yeah, all those things are valid questions. You know, neither one of us is K-State guys, meaning we didn't go to school there. We never spent any time covering the school extensively. I mean, for me, if there's one coach who probably has earned that, it's the guy who built the program and rebuilt it after, you know, kind of the debacle they had under Ron Prince. And also, it's not like you're taking a guy who, I mean, Sean's really well respected as a special teams guy. I don't think it's a stretch to think that, you know, it's not like this is Alabama or Texas either, where you're going to get, you know, guys, you know, like the hottest coordinator is going to go, I'm going to go to Manhattan, Kansas and follow Bill Snyder. You know, let's keep in mind, you know, that axiom, it's not great to follow a legend. You want to be the guy to after the guy. You know, could they get a Jim Leavitt to come back? It's obviously the language is in a contract to make it favorable. Would they get Brent Venables? I don't know if Brent would take that job. He's obviously one of those guys who learned at K-State. But for me, I would think, you know what? I think maybe that is the right thing to do and give Sean a chance if and when that time when the time comes that Bill Snyder's ready to step down. You agree?
I think it would be a popular job. And like you said, there are some pretty respected coaches who have who have come through there. You mentioned Brent Venables, who I still don't understand how he's not a head coach. Jim Leavitt has always been mentioned for that job. Obviously, he had a fall from grace at USF. He's resurrected himself nicely at Colorado, now at Oregon. I'm not close enough to it, like you said. All I know is I've heard a lot of reservations from other people and almost like, yeah, there's no way they can do that. But, you know, what's the worst that can happen? Give him a shot. If it doesn't work out after a couple years.
Can it really work out any worse than the Ron Prince when you went outside the family worked?
That one was that one did not work out very well.
I know. I said, can it work? It wouldn't go. Can it be any worse?
Look, and that would also, by the way, be another reason to maybe, and this is just totally speculative. He's given no reason to indicate that he would step down before the season, other than, of course, this health scare he's going through. They got a really good team coming back. If you could set your guy up for success by handing him this team versus, you know, next year when they have to find a new quarterback and start over a little bit.
Yeah. So do you agree with me? Make Sean Snyder the not the head coach in waiting, but like he's the next coach.
I think you should go get the best possible coach. I mean, he should be in the mix.
So you're saying no.
Saying he should obviously be considered. But if there's somebody who we think is a better coach who would take the job, I don't know why you would not go with the best candidate.
Because whoever you get for that job is going to be an unknown commodity to some degree. Now, the closest thing who wouldn't be an unknown would be Jim Leavitt at this stage. You know, we like Brent Venables. Brent Venables, by the way, I think isn't really like chomping at the bit to go be a head coach. He knows he's got a good situation at Clemson. And as much as we like Brent Venables, he's never been a head coach. There's no guarantees that, you know, he would go in there and knock it out of the park. I mean, I think he will do well as a head coach, but
no guarantees for sure. But I mean, at this point, he's been a national championship defensive.
If you are Brent Venables, by the way,
and he has worked, he has played and coached at Kansas State.
Okay, if you're Brent Venables, which job would you rather have? Assuming they both came open, this is a big assumption, but to be the head coach at K-State in 2018, or to go work with his best friend, the AD at Texas Tech, Kirby Hocutt.
Are you suggesting that would come open this year?
No, I'm saying, you know, like, let's say hypothetically both jobs are open in 2018. I mean, to me, Texas Tech is a better situation than K-State.
Texas Tech is probably a more appealing job because of the fact that it's in Texas. But he's a wildcat. Is he going to turn down his alma mater to go there?
I'm just saying to you, think about what you're walking into. You would be the new head coach. Now, clearly the AD would want you. The AD had come from North Dakota State. But you're replacing Bill Snyder.
I know you're replacing Bill Snyder, but And that's why I think
I'd be... And you're going probably going against his wishes. That was one of your mentors, and you're going against his wishes.
That's true. That's an issue to consider. If he's going to become a head coach and he has the chance to do that at the school where he played for Bill Snyder, I don't know how he turns that down. By the way, speaking of Texas Tech, we should mention a interesting theory that was posited by somebody who we won't mention at Big 12 meetings. If Cliff gets fired this year, would Texas Tech go out and hire Art Briles?
I don't know. I think I'll believe it when I see it. I know that there are some powerful Texas Tech people who are close to Art Briles, but I don't know. I'll believe it. Like I said, I'll believe it when I see it.
Texas Tech does have a history of having hired Bob Knight after he got fired at Indiana, Billy Gillespie after he got fired at Kentucky. So neither of those are anywhere near, you know, what happened under Art Briles at Baylor. Nevertheless, I can see why people would think that's something that could happen there. Nothing has changed my opinion that Briles is too toxic and will never get another, at least not FBS, head coaching job.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, look, I think Texas Tech's defense should be much better this year with the year 300 under David Gibbs. I don't know if they can be better on offense.
I hope so. I mean, it's been terrible for 5 years now.
I don't know if they can get much better, you know, without Mahomes on as the trigger man, but I think defensively they should be better. So we'll see. I mean, I'm not writing Cliff off. He's a really smart coach, so we'll see what happens there. But yeah, when we both heard that theory, like, and there was some rationale behind it. I wasn't ready to jump all in and buy it, but it was interesting to hear, and it was from somebody who we both trust and know is pretty informed.
All right, so to put a bow on our coverage from Phoenix, we got you PJ Fleck last week, and literally back-to-back we did these interviews. We have Brett Bielema, the Arkansas head coach, who just always enthusiastic to sit down and talk about his program. But one thing we should note, this interview was conducted last Thursday. On Monday, it was announced that Raleigh Williams, Arkansas's top running back last season, who suffered another neck injury this spring, is retiring. He actually announced that himself. So you'll hear us ask him about it, but this was before we knew this information. So unfortunately, we didn't get to ask him about the impact of him not coming back. But let's play that for you now. All right, guys, we are pleased to be joined by Arkansas coach Brett Bielema, who we enjoy visiting with every year here. I think we don't know which coach is actually here. We always see you here.
Yeah, but you know what? It's a good event. What I love to come, I started coming here probably my first year. I think Coach Alvarez recommended it to me, and it allows you to be around coaches that, especially I'm one of the few SEC guys out here. I was on American Football Coach Association. That's why I came, really. But you can talk about discipline, you can talk about scheduling. We schedule games out of this meeting, you know, on our schedules for, you know, out of conference games. So it's really just a great event.
Who's the most interesting other coach here? If we're saying you're number one, who are you saying? Like, okay, this
I don't know if I want that down ranking. You know, the guy, PJ, I've known PJ, you know, growing up in the business, and I knew he was going to be a guy eventually, and knew a lot of people that knew him, and obviously he's a guy that walks to his own drum, you know, and I think that's fun to watch. I'm actually pretty good friends with Mike Leach. Catch up with Mike. He was unable to join us on a trip this year that I usually get to hang out, and they just had twins as grandparents, so I got to hear that whole story. In the American Football Coach Association, Rich Rod was our president this year, but there's a lot of personalities in that room, and with some of the hot topics going around college football right now, some energy came out of those meetings, shall we say, so it's kind of fun to see that.
Well, I would think the hot topic, but it just passed, was all of the recruiting legislation. I mean, is that still something that was a big part of the agenda this week, even though it's gone through?
You know, two things. I always go back to, elementary school or junior high science class, right? When you're learning to do an experiment, and there's these things called variables, and if you do more than one variable at a time, you never know the result because there's too many variables in play. We just put a whole bunch of variables into action at one time, mm-hmm. you know? I would have preferred to probably have seen either early. I would have loved to have seen the spring visit dates and keep the recruiting calendar the same and see how that changed. You know what I mean? I don't know what the combination now of we're going to have. They keep saying we're going to take a year and look at it. Well, is it going to? I know the coaches and our high school coaches are adamantly opposed to the December sign day, because there's going to be a lot of them that's literally taking place on the week of their state championship or semi-championship. I mean, it's just...
Or what happens if a coach gets fired or a coach jumps to another job? Are you going to give them waivers?
And here, okay, we're supposed to be all about student welfare, which I think is priority number one. Now these spring recruiting dates. All right, so there's a rule that I think most coaches abide by, is that after your sixth semester of high school, you got a pretty good understanding of where a kid is.
Academically.
Now, in the sixth semester, the most prominent semester of that kid's career, he could take five visit weekends. And tell me what that does for his academic performance. You know what I mean? And just... That's the thing I think people didn't... All of a sudden, we were taking some spring visits because a couple students said, hey, I'd like to have taken spring visits. Give it a one-month window or do something. I don't know what, three months. Especially April and May. I mean, that's the prominent academic time.
One of the coaches I spoke to was not happy about it. He said, you know, for 3 months, he said, this to me makes no sense. He thought it was very harmful. But he said, you know, we all voted one way, and then all of a sudden it's a 180. Now, when I talked to Todd Berry, who runs the AFCA as a former ULM coach, he said, well, it's kind of a compromise because we heard the student athletes wanted January, and they wanted no dead period.
Yeah.
And so it was like, okay, well, then when I explained that to somebody else, they were like, I don't know why this is a compromise here. Who are we listening to?
Well, I think just like within my team, you know, I have what we call a hog council. And I had a Badger council and I had Wisconsin. So it's two players from every position. And I go to them for their voice and how we handle our business, you know, and what we do. So I understand why we're leaning on the student athletes. I think you got to look at who our student athletes were talking. So, like, I remember when I first started going, the kids that I put on those student athlete advisory boards a lot of times were maybe former walk-ons that are great students that I knew could handle the extra demands of their time. They didn't get recruited anymore, and I got recruited. You know, I went to spring game and shook Coach Fry's hand. That was my recruiting story. I mean, big deal. You know, so every kid's story is a little bit different. I'm sure we'll get to where we want to be. Again, nothing more important to me than this. You know, the ability to make those kids. And here's the other: they passed a rule about 4 years ago, so kids during their senior year used to be able to make up a certain number of academic misfortunes early in their career. So if I'm a senior, I could go take. You can't do that no more in your senior year, your junior.
What was the logic behind it? They think people were just...
I think you were having guys that were literally taking 12 classes and turning, you know, D's and A's. And I've been across this country and I realize sometimes there's some kids that get benefits that you know. So I think, again, unintended consequences. That they're past a rule. That's one variable. So now kids have to concentrate better through their junior year. Now all of a sudden we're going to take them out of their highest performing semester, because up to that junior, you can still take repeat classes up to your spring semester, your junior year. So if I'm a junior and I am going to be D1 bound, and I know that I took a sophomore Spanish class that I got a D in, and I can get a, you know, maybe a better grade, I can still take it that spring semester. Oh, wait a minute, yeah, I'm also visiting these five universities. So that's it.
Okay, so just devil's advocate here.
Yep. You make a great devil.
Oh, great. Now that's going to go viral.
I don't know which is the worst image. Him with horns on, or you coming in here with bells on?
With my text, yeah. I don't know, I had an uncle or somebody always say he used to be there with bells on. So
all the issues are totally legitimate. If this had all been happening when you were at Wisconsin and somebody said you're going to have a chance to start bringing kids in here in June when it's beautiful in Madison, mm-hmm. as opposed to January, do you think you'd feel differently about it?
I do think we should be allowed to do June. I don't think that's at Arkansas. I know there's a little SEC Big Ten thing, but I think taking June is very smart. I think for me or Wisconsin or anybody, because the kids are done with classes, there's a natural little break there. You know what I mean? What we do find, you know, just because we work our camp dates, a lot of times kids aren't done with classes till the end of May. You know what I mean? June 1st is that kind of that drop dead period. So. I don't think it's dependent on where I'm at. You know, now I do think that we found a way to get guys there. And, you know, if a kid really wants to get there, I think even though they say they don't have the means, usually there's some way to make it happen. That limits certain kids. I understand that. But that's kind of been the story throughout time.
If you could be the king of college football, what would be the biggest thing you would change about it?
I think, without a doubt, the opportunities that are student athletes to be recruited nationally. is a good thing. So that means they shouldn't have any reservations about if I'm from Florida going to school in Oregon, if that's where I want to go, because of you know, cost of attendance factor, and so that's becoming a little bit more of a balance act. I would think universal scheduling. You know what I mean? There probably is a merit to weigh in, and I know the football coaches or the committee that decides who's in the playoffs. They try to do their best, but there is some dramatic differences as coaches. We realize. Somebody's 12 games versus somebody else's 12 games.
Would you like to go to the Pac-12 model?
No, I just think like there's certain teams that they're just 12 games aren't going to be to the same level. Two of them might be, you know what I mean? But the today's world, we're all about perfect, right? So some teams maybe at certain levels that are 11-1 or 12-0, I think would be some of those might struggle to be a bowl eligible team in another conference, you know what I mean? And it's not right, wrong, or different. It's just what it is, you know. So I think those two things will jump out. Those will be going.
That big a difference, huh?
There's a big difference.
Yeah, like I could see somebody saying 11-1 in one conference is 9-3 in another. You think it'd be that big a difference?
Well, but not amongst the Power Fives. I'm saying, but even like you know, okay. When some of the other ones make runs, you know, and you're like, oh, it's just not. To do it week in and week out, it's a,
gotcha.
What I've learned in the SEC, it's about as much about being able to survive and get to the next week and have you guys ready to go on Saturday. There were definitely times, you know, that when I was a head coach of Wisconsin where you knew you had a little lull in your schedule, you know what I mean? That it just wasn't the same thing week in and week out, you know? It's just what it was.
Yeah. Did you feel like this is year five for you?
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel like you'd be where you are now? Did you feel like you'd be further? How did you?
You know, I actually was feeling we were bowl eligible earlier than we've ever been bowl eligible. And we closed the year with two bad ones in the second half. So I say this, we were in a good position the first half, which gets you a little bit excited. But we lost one in the second half against Missouri, which was, you know, gut-wrenching, indescribable, can't happen. And then turn around, you know, Virginia Tech took Clemson to the wire in that championship game of theirs. And, you know, so I knew, and we were up big on them, weren't able to close the second half. And if we just win those two games, we're a 9-win team. I built one win every year. But I do think this, everybody would have been walking around thinking they're King Kong. Everybody would have been like, oh, Bielma's. And now we had a little bit of a setback, and it's really allowed me going into year five to really kind of throttle them a little bit, you know, and they're very coachable. They're listening very, very well. So we went to a bowl game every year than my first, which is great. It allows us to get those extra practices. Recruiting is as good as it's ever been. So I am excited where that's going. I just want the win total to be spiked up, you know. You get to a 9-10-11 win season, now you're somewhere.
So given the way the last season ended, what was the biggest change you wanted to make?
You know, accountability, without a doubt. Yeah. Count on me. We got to a point now. We did a lot of culture building when we got in there. We had guys that were underachievers in the weight room, in the classroom, and in their performances, people. And to take that to another level, to get them to care about themselves first, and then thinking, I can't care about you until I learn to care for me. You know what I mean? And now that's building our guys' accountability factor has been off the charts this spring, and they're so coachable. I made change to the 3-4 on defense, which has been a big deal. I think it's going to be a positive for us. And we got so many good players back on offense. That's they know what failed, and I can't wait to bring it to success.
You had your quarterback, obviously his brother had a lot of success. Now you have, did all these big JC receivers, they get there in mid-year, or are they coming in now?
Yeah, two came in. So we had two right out of the same JUCO, actually, out of Mississippi Gulf Coast.
And great program. Big kid,
yeah, man. Brandon Martin's probably all of 6'4", 220. We probably need to back him off a couple of cheeseburgers. I mean, he's going to get about 215, but it's been really good. Catches the ball, physical, tough, demanding, loves football. And Jonathan Nance came with him. They've been together now for 2 years, so it's kind of been nice to have that other guy to lean on, you know, a little bit. And then we have Jared Cornelius back, who's a good one. And then we had a couple sophomores, and LaMichael Petway and Deion Stewart come along. So we're actually we lost four guys to the NFL, four wide receivers. And for me, you guys know my history. Do you have that many good wide receivers? Is not very common. So I'm excited for this group to kind of prove their own.
Yeah, so Austin Allen, I think, surprised a lot of people last year. Coming in, very productive right from the beginning. What do you, what's the next step for him? What do you think his potential is this year?
Two things. Crunch time. He needs to be great in the red zone, third down, the time when a quarterback is kind of defining to himself. And then he can't put the weight of the world on his shoulders. When I saw his performance decrease is when I think he got in big games and he thought he had to do something more than he was. I stole this from Paul Chris a long time ago. He used to use it as the OC. I always used to say, I don't need to be special. I just need the good you to be you. You know, just every day, if that good in you can come out, we're going to go places. You know, just be the best you. And I think our kids are taking that.
You had all these great running backs at Wisconsin and obviously came in and had some good ones here. Yeah. What's the situation like with some of your younger guys now?
It's kind of the same thing. You know, when I was at Wisco, I remember I came in my first year and P.J. Hill ran for all these yards. No one knew who he was. So then after him, John Clay was kind of a little bit more heralded, but Monty Ball came in and Jamie White came in and everybody's like, wow. You know, we've done the same thing here. So I brought Alex in my first year. Jonathan Williams was already there. They have two great years for us. Both of them leave a year early. Both are juniors, jump out. One goes to the Bills and one goes to the Seahawks and playing in the NFL. So you're kind of like, two juniors just jumped out. What are we going to do? Well, Raleigh Williams becomes the SEC leading rusher. And there's a kid behind him named Devon Whaley that really just started to come into his own, and he's going to take a huge step for us this year. Might be physically one of the best jump cut runners I've ever had. Very talented player. And then we got a couple of freshmen behind him. We in our program, the two things we can recruit are O-linemen, running backs, and tight ends, really. And we've been able to do that pretty good, I think.
What's the the injury situation, though, at running back?
You know, actually, when I get back, I'm going to have a meeting with the doctors and Raleigh's family and figure out exactly where they're at with everything.
Yeah. You anticipate him being ready for...
You know, I just because I've been out here... I know that we not only when he returned to play the first time, I was like, okay, we're not going to have him again. And then all of a sudden they started talking about it. So then I told his mom and dad, I said, you find an independent doctor on your own that we don't have any ties to. And if we're all coming to the same answer, we'll let this thing proceed. So I think it's getting all those doctors on the same page and the same table. And I think even the original ones we talked to, now they're checking with their people to see where we're at.
My last thing would be Alabama's obviously had this great run. I mean, amazing run. Saban just gets this huge extension the other day. Do other programs in their division, do you guys look at it as like we're chasing them or we can't worry about Alabama? We just got to.
No, I think that, I don't know if the kids do. Well, I think as coaches, you have to have an understanding of where your competition is, and I know when I was at Wisconsin, I knew we couldn't get to a Big Ten championship until we beat Ohio State. And the year we beat Ohio State, we won our first Big Ten championship. I don't know if it's as prominent in this league as it is with that because Alabama's obviously the gold standard. They've established that. But any other team, Ole Miss has beat them. We beat Ole Miss, I believe, the last 3 years, but they beat Alabama a couple of those years, So I was like, it's not as... it's not the same as it was in that regards, but I do know that we got to have success against them to have a chance to get to Atlanta.
Getting the visibility from the show you guys did, have you seen a lot of feedback you get nationally from
it? Without a doubt. So we actually then would take the episodes and mail them to parents. I think the kids definitely want. There's a lot of kids that say, "Coach, love the show," but when we go into the homes and the moms and the parents and the teachers and the coaches. Coach, a lot of them love my wife. I don't know if I was a big hit, but they liked her. And I think the reality of it was big. And just because we got a baby on the way and it's been kind of a crazy one with new defense, new staff, I opted not to do it this year, but might look into doing it next year. I had the option, just didn't feel good.
It's going to be what are you most apprehensive about becoming a dad? Because coaches don't sleep much anyway.
No apprehension. All the tests have been... Everything's alive and healthy. Everybody, it's a little baby girl. Everybody thought I wanted a boy, but I just said I want something healthy. And I'm excited. Waited a long time to be a father. It was something I always wanted to do, but just the way it all worked out. So I'm excited. I do think that I'm sure it's going to create some new things that I've never had to deal with. But I always say that my best part of my job is every day. I drive into work and I'm drinking a cup of Joe, and I say to myself, what's going to happen today that I have no idea is going to happen? And I'm sure it's probably going to be twice that effect now with a little baby in the world.
Are you ready to change diapers?
I grew up with a younger sibling. I was 7 when my little sister was born, so I do have some baby training in me back in the day, so we'll see.
Yeah, it's an interesting experience.
Yes, I'm eager.
All right, we thank Brett Bielema for joining us. He is always engaging, and he's one of our favorite guests. Stu, so we talked about this with him on there. It is coming up on year five for him at Arkansas. How warm do you think his seat is there?
I think it's starting to get warm, and it's basically because of what he said with the way last season ended. It's just like a losing to Missouri, I think, was considered pretty inexcusable. Missouri wasn't very good last year. They blew the bowl game, and they end up having basically taken a step back rather than continuing that slow climb he had had. Jeff Long is his AD. I don't think Jeff Long is going to make – he's not the kind of AD that's going to make a, you know, abrupt change. So I think they'd have to be pretty bad this year for that to happen, but – I can see why Arkansas fans might be starting to get frustrated. It's not, I mean, he has yet to have, I think there was an understanding, right, when he first got there that Petrino left him a big mess and it was going to take a little time.
A huge mess.
I think
we forgot how bad they were in 2012 with John L. jumps in. And so you have three coaches in, you know, whatever it was, 14 months, maybe it wasn't even that long. And, you know, John L. was kind of a disastrous Band-Aid to throw on what, you know, the grease fire Petrino left behind. I do think it's worth noting about, you know, how depleted the roster was when he went in there.
No question. And that's why he got a mulligan for going 0-8 in the SEC his first year and 2-6 the next. But, you know, that's ancient history now. So, you know, I think it's reasonable at this point to expect more than 7 wins or even 8 wins. And I think he'll get it done because the defense took such a step back last year. It's got to be better. They've got a good quarterback coming back. You got to believe they'll always have a good running game. You know, look, there's a lot of SEC West coaches considered to be on the hot seat. Most notably, Sumlin, Malzahn, Bielema, Freeze is, but for other reasons. You know, they're not all going to lose their jobs. Some of them are going to bounce back just fine. And if I'm putting my money on whether that's going to be Bielema or, say, Sumlin, I mean, Bielema's got enough of a track record that I think it'll be him.
I think Bielema has the most favorable situation of them, meaning if he goes 7-6 again, I think he's still
– he could survive that.
I don't think
that.
They fire him. Yeah. If that happens in College Station or if it happens in Auburn, I think they'll clean house at both of those places.
Correct. But what happens at that point if they're 7-6 again? I mean, clearly
then,
he'd be
then
under
– Then he is on a hot seat going into 2018.
How much do you think, you know, what we're saying right now, that he has a little more leeway is just due to the fact that he has – He has brought so much with his personality and become such a popular figure off the field that you maybe are more willing to forgive the on the field stuff.
For me, it matters, but I'm not an Arkansas booster.
Yeah.
I mean, look, he went from having, you know, one of the more despicable characters in college sports as your head coach. And then you went to a guy who is a big, engaging personality. Now, look, you know, I like a lot of the stuff Bielema says at like media days and how he carries himself. That's probably, you know, there's probably other people who don't like him for some of those same reasons. But I do think he represents Arkansas and makes Arkansas relevant and interesting in a ways. And I think that matters. Now, if he goes 5-7 this year, I don't know.
I think he'd be in trouble at that point. There's too much at stake. You're paying too much money to be going to be taking another step back. You know, I think the minimum
is as long as he gets him to a bowl game, I think he's fine this year. Now, if he doesn't, then I think all bets are off. But, you know, and we got to see what happens in the SEC, who emerges, because like you're alluding to, aside from Alabama, somebody is going to take a big step forward. It has to at this point.
Does all of this make you appreciate, like, you I know you referred to Petrino as a person in not the most savory way, and I understand so, but, I mean, he had them in a BCS bowl. BCS bowl, and then, you know, I want to say they won 11 games the next year. And at Arkansas, now we're talking about, like, well, you know, it's decent if they won 8 or 9 games. Does it make you appreciate more just how good a football coach he is?
Oh, I think he is a really, really good football coach. There's no question about that. Now, you know,
because Arkansas is never going to recruit. They recruit well, but they are not going to recruit at the level of Alabama, LSU, maybe even A&M. Certainly Ole Miss under Freeze has recruited at a higher level. Like, they're not playing with necessarily the same blue chips that a lot of the other teams in their division are.
No, but I'm going to use the same thing you just used on me. And this is going to hit close to home, Stu, so don't hate me for it. Does all this, after what we're talking about, make you look at Houston Dale Nutt Jr. a little differently?
Well, he definitely had his moments there.
He won three SEC division at three Western titles. He was the three-time SEC Coach of the Year. And if he's listening to this right now, I know he's gesturing around his waist at this point. So
is that right? Three-time SEC Coach of the Year?
Yes. 2001, 2006, and 2008.
That 2006 team was not far from having a chance to play.
I should clarify. One of those is when he was at Ole Miss.
I also think that you said three division titles.
Yes.
So he played in the SEC title game three. Yeah, you're right. Three times. Yeah, he had his moments. There's no question about it. It didn't end particularly well, but at either stop.
It almost never ends well. Yeah. It almost never ends well for anybody.
The weird thing now, I'm looking at his record, is that, you know, this is a decade ago now, but it was such a bizarre last year there. So they, do you remember this? They win 10 games in 06. They go to the SEC title game. They lose to Florida. They actually ended up 10-4.
I mean, they were 7-1 in the SEC.
But there was so much controversy swirling around the guy, the Mustaine, and do you remember the other names of the other guys? It was the Springdale Four.
Yeah. You know what?
He hired Gus Malzahn as his offensive coordinator to get those guys, then basically took away all his, took it away from him after one game. So, I mean, we're not going to run that anymore. And then there was all this stuff in the net. I mean, you remember the text messages with the TV anchor?
I do. I have a buddy I work with at ESPN Magazine who just doesn't cover college football, and this was one of his first bigger stories to work on. I remember he did this feature where, you know, there was a lot of it that felt kind of icky, to be honest. Not his writing, but just kind of the tenor of everything that was out there.
And me, and I got pretty involved in that too. I reported a pretty extensive story about what was going on. I mean, you had fans that were sending Freedom of Information Acts to get. I mean, there was they had just won 10 games, and there was a section of the fans that wanted him gone so bad that they were filing public. You've never seen anything like that. Filing Freedom of Information Act requests to, like, dig up dirt on him. So then they come back the next year, and they weren't bad. They went 8-4, most memorably beat LSU when LSU was number one in the country. They had Darren McFadden. They had Felix Jones. But it was like a foregone conclusion. If he doesn't get out, they're going to fire him if he doesn't get out first, which he did, to go to Ole Miss. So, God, that was a weird time. And maybe that kind of clouds in my mind as I think back to him as a coach. But you're right. He had 1, 2, 3, 4 seasons at Arkansas of at least 9 wins. Bielema's had none so far. So,
by the way, when he had those 9 win seasons, this was usually they weren't playing as many games, right? It was the 11 wins. It was the 11 game season, not the 12.
Yes, that is. Well,
no, it's
a lot of 9-4s in there
because he went to a conference title game.
9-5,
look,
a 9-4.
Look, his first year he was 9-3. That's obviously, and that was with a bowl game. He went to bowls 7. He
all
went
right, to. Let's just look
went
at
to
it.
8 bowls. He went to 8 bowls in his last year at Arkansas, 2007. He went 8-4, which is 12 games, and that includes the Cotton Bowl.
Let's look at a list.
What more do you need to know? What more math do you need to know here, Stu?
Well, I just want to compare. So I'm looking up a list of Arkansas head coaches. And Houston Nutt's 610 career winning percentage there.
He's won the second most games in school history behind the legendary Frank Broyles.
Ken Hatfield had a nice run there, went 760. It's not that much less than Petrino. Mean, Petrino was 667. Nutt was 610. Looking back here, Lou Holtz, 735 in his distinguished run.
And he also had a messy exit, right?
He did. I think he had a good run there. I don't, you know, 10 years later, we can look back and say, yes, he had a good run there. And also, you know, looking at all of these guys' records makes me think, you know what? Bielema really needs to step it up. I mean, Arkansas is capable of more than what they've been doing.
Yes. I think my goal in 2017 is to bring Hugh and Houston Nutt together.
Let's do it.
All right.
It's been a decade. We can bury the hatchet. All right. With that, Bruce, this will be my last episode for a little bit because I'm doing that one thing that is like a foreign concept in your world, which is going on vacation. Can't come soon enough. Maui, here we come. And I'll be back later next week. As always, if you enjoy the Audible, please subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you get podcasts. Leave a 5-star review while you're at it. It helps get the word out. And you can send emails to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. We often get tweets asking what the email address is. I'll say it again, theaudiblepod@gmail.com. We'll see you next time.